Welcome back to the Cleveland Baseball Talk Podcast. I'm Joe Noga, joined by Paul Hoynes. Hoynesy, the Guardians fall to the Boston Red Sox 2-0 in the blink of an eye last night. 1 hour and 49 minutes it took for Tanner Houck and the Red Sox to handle Cleveland. Tanner Houck was in another stratosphere last night, just going through Cleveland's lineup with relative ease. He was able to locate all of his pitches and really just keep Cleveland off balance. One of the best pitching performances that we've seen against the Guardians in a long time. What'd you take away from last night's game as far as the performance of the Red Sox pitching before we even get into any of the craziness that occurred in the middle innings there?
Yeah, just a dominant performance, 94 pitches, 9 innings, 9 strikeouts, no walks, 3 hits. Cleveland didn't even get a guy to second base, Joe. They didn't even have a guy in a scoring position. They stranded 2 guys, 3 singles. That was really a dominant performance.
Yeah, one of the ways that you keep a team from that's really good at coming back and rallying, and has been so far all season. One of the ways you keep them down is by making sure, A, they don't get on base, and B, when they do get on base, they don't advance. And that was really the case. Every time Cleveland got a runner on base, the next guy was just out. He was just overwhelmed. So you really did a nice job. And after the game, Stephen Vogt said he just tipped his cap. There's really nothing you can do when a guy executes that way. So hats off to Tanner Houck. He throws a Maddux. The Maddux, a complete game shutout on fewer than 100 pitches. The stat made famous by a Guardians fan, a stat head named Jason Lucart, popularized the term, and it caught on. And the Maddux was recorded last night against the Guardians. Just fun to sort of be on the other side. Not fun being on the other side of it, but to see one happen, especially at Fenway, where no lead is ever safe. You thought maybe going into the eighth, ninth inning, maybe they could flip the magic switch and put a couple of runs on the board, but not the way Tanner Houck was pitching last night.
No, he retired the last 13 guys he faced, Joe, and it seemed the longer the game went, the more aggressive Cleveland's hitters became, and they were swinging so early in the count. There were so many quick outs. Mm-hmm. I'm surprised you had time to write a game story. That thing was smoke. That thing was sailing by. And, you see games like that where the momentum just shifts, to the pitcher, and when he's throwing strikes, when he's getting ahead. And, whatever game plan Cleveland had, Cleveland's offense slash hitters had going into that game, it did not work.
Yeah, I normally, if I don't have a lot written by the seventh inning, usually I'm sort of in a panic. This time it was the eighth inning was upon me before I could even have a few paragraphs down. And it was tough. There was not a lot to write about from the Cleveland side of things. So until the third inning, when when the circus came to town, Ben Lively, makes his first start of the season for the Guardians, comes off the injured list after the viral infection had kept him down in spring training, and it was worth the wait, I guess, for Lively. He came out and looked really sharp through 5 innings. He had about an 80 pitch limit, but this is a guy who, Stephen Vogt described him as a pitcher before the game. He was going to attack these guys and get them out. His fastball command was great. He had a sharp slider and really just looked really good in his first outing until the third inning, when he gave up a base hit, gave up a double off the Green Monster to put runners at second and third, and then was called for a balk with a runner at third base and 2 outs by home plate umpire Roberto Ortiz. And for a while there, it was, we were sort of searching for what had happened. Did he flinch when he came set? Was there something? He was pitching from the windup, so we really didn't understand what the problem was. But after the game, we found out from Stephen Vogt, the explanation that was given was that he didn't declare that he was going to pitch from the windup with the runner at third base. And a rule that came into Major League Baseball relatively recently was that you have to declare for each batter, you have to declare to the umpire that you're going to pitch from the windup. And Ortiz said that Lively didn't declare for the new batter that he was facing, and it cost him the balk in that situation. What did you think of the move, and were you as confused as sort of the rest of us were until we got the explanation from Vogt?
Yeah, I can never tell when a guy balks anyway, Joe, unless the guy's standing on a rubber and he drops the ball. That's the only balk I know. But I thought that was pretty. I don't want to sound like a homer, but I thought that was an umpire injecting himself into the game when it wasn't really needed. I think he could have warned. He could have warned. Lively. He could have. Stepped out and did something instead of. In a game like that. You call a balk, you know what's going to happen. A run is going to score. I thought that was unnecessary. It seems like just from the research I've done, Joe, that this was part of the rule change in 2023. It's tied into the disengagements, the two pickoff throws to first, to a base when a runner's on base. And I don't get how you declared. I mean, you got to send an umpire an email or something between pitches? What is that?
Well, Lively said that, he thought that he had made the indication to the umpire that he was going to go from the windup. It doesn't have to be some sort of, official signal or anything like that. It's more of a, make eye contact with him and tell him, hey, I'm going from the windup, and then go up and do your thing. Lively said that he thought he had done it. The umpire, I guess the discussion went with Vogt that, it wasn't, registered with Ortiz, and as soon as Lively went into the windup there, the play was dead, and everything was over. The sad thing was that Lively was going so well at that point, even with the runners on base, he struck out the next batter, Tristan Casas. He struck Casas out and ended the inning. It would have been, he had gotten out of the inning with the strikeout, with back-to-back strikeouts, and got himself out of trouble there, and the score would have remained tied at zero. He winds up giving up a home run to Connor Wong over the Green Monster, with two out in the fourth inning, that made it 2-0, and that was it for scoring. But he looked so good. He had what, seven strikeouts in the game. He was overwhelming, Boston's lineup at the time too. And it just really sort of took away from what the Guardians were able to do, what Lively was able to do in that game, to have the balk be the focus of things right there.
I thought it was interesting, not last night, the night before, at least, watching the game on TV, the Cleveland coaching staff, including Vogt, were up on the top step screaming at the umpires on a balk call, on a balk they thought the Boston pitcher had committed, and no call was made. And so it just seemed, kind of, just to have them come back and call a balk last night. That's kind of a ticky-tacky foul, I thought, that this was the NBA. That was kind of a, just an unnecessary intrusion into the game by the game officials.
Well, yeah, and it's sort of continued a pattern from the series so far. There were a couple of situations where the umpires became more of the story than they need to be. Later on in that game, there was a play at first base where David Hamilton, the Boston shortstop, sort of sent a dribbler up the first baseline. Wes Parsons, the relief pitcher for Cleveland, fielded the ball, sort of threw up the first baseline over the head of Josh Naylor, but the play was backed up by Andrés Giménez. Giménez picked up the ball, went over and tagged Hamilton after he had overrun first base, and the umpire, called him out and ruled that he had turned and made a move towards second base. And so at that point, you're fair game, and Jimenez tagged him. I talked to Jimenez after the game in the clubhouse, and he said, you know, he's always backing up that play. He's all when it looks like there's going to be an overthrow, he's always sort of, trying to be over there to make sure that the ball doesn't get too far into right field. And then the line that he told me was, you know, I always put the tag on the guy like that. This is just the first time they ever called it. and he was kind of surprised by it. I asked him, are you surprised by it? He said, well, yeah, I do it every time anyways. I've never seen them call it. So, you know, I guess he's going to keep doing it if that's the case. But, you know, kind of unusual. You only ever see that in like beer league softball where the guys argue about that, you know, turning towards second base thing being an out call. So just another play where if the umpire doesn't call him out there, I don't think Cleveland, you know, gets upset about it in any way, because like Jimenez said, he didn't expect him to be called out.
Yeah, and it's such a it's a tough call because, you know, you watch the replay. I really didn't see Hamilton like motion towards second base. You know, it's such a, you know, like I guess if you just shrug your shoulders towards second base, you know, you're mm-hmm. liable to you're a live runner then.
Yeah, well, that's why, you know, dating back to T-ball and Pee-wee and all the before even travel ball, to, you know, teaching my son and his teammates. Hit that bag and make a right turn to foul territory every time you do. So there's no question, because you can't be tagged out if you do that. So, but it's different, obviously, in the big leagues for sure. Again, other weird calls. You got to even go back to that the play at the plate involving Jimenez and the blocking call that really was a game changer in Tuesday's comeback win. When the Boston catcher was deemed to have, you know, stuck his leg out and blocked the lane for Jimenez sliding. And, you know, when they challenged that call, that's a play that could go 50-50 once it goes to replay.
Yeah, definitely, Joe. And, you know, what we were talking about this yesterday, and, you know, it seems like when there's a blocking the plate call or anything close to it, the umpire on the scene, you know, always calls it one way, and it almost always gets reversed if the team challenges, you know. And what I think, Jimenez was called out, right, mm-hmm. on the scene, and they challenged, and, you know, the ruling came back that Wong had blocked the plate, and, you know, that Jimenez was safe. So it's a confusing rule. It's a kind of a gray area rule where the catcher is often in no man's land. But, you know, like we said, you know, Wong definitely put his foot out to block Jimenez from having a clear path to the plate. And the rule says that somehow the catcher has to give the runner a path to the plate. And that was denied on that play.
Yeah. All of this just adds up to, a pattern here of, you know, the Guardians are playing well. They're, you know, tied for first in the division, and entering yesterday's game, they had the best record in baseball. And these you know, weird interpretations of rules keep popping up and getting in the way of their good times. I mean, they're out there having fun, and the umpires are trying to sort of harsh out their mellow. I mean, it's been kind of weird, but the vibe still in the clubhouse is strong. It's still good. They're playing, good baseball in a lot of ways. Even in a loss like that, there's something they can take away and learn from that, because I guarantee you every pitcher that goes up there with a runner on third base and wants to pitch from the windup now is going to make it very clear to the umpires what he intends to do moving forward.
Yeah, I guess, you know, even if you have to step off the mound and wave to the umpire, mm-hmm. or, you know, send them a message by carrier pigeon, I guess you're going to, you know, they're going to get their message through. Joe, a lot of moves before the game. Can you take mm-hmm. us through them?
It was that was kind of crazy. They actually made a trade with San Diego. They bring in Pedro Avila, and they trade for cash considerations. Avila was designated for assignment by the Padres. He has some major league experience, and you know, this is a guy that is going to join the club, but not until either the end of this road trip or the opening of the homestand. So he's not on the 26-man roster yet, but he's sort of en route. And so in order to get Ben Lively on the active roster, they put Eli Morgan on the 15-day injured list with right shoulder inflammation, and they also optioned Xavion Curry, who you know, had opened the series here in Boston with five scoreless innings, and did nothing to sort of warrant being optioned. But in order to get Lively on, they had to make room. So Curry goes down to AAA. Lively takes his spot. Morgan goes on the injured list. Wes Parsons, who they had acquired last week from Toronto in a trade, he comes in. He pitches two innings last night of scoreless ball, and you know, was singing his praises after the game. And looking forward to what he can contribute. This is another big guy who throws hard, Paul. So this is you know, fitting the description of the Trevor Stephan sort of profile. You know, once Sam Henches comes back, I think again they're going to have a good basketball front court in that bullpen once again with Wes Parsons out there. So he's making contributions. And you know, I think more moves are on the horizon. We heard from Chris Antonetti yesterday that Gavin Williams is making progress. He had a sim game on Monday. He's scheduled for three innings out in Arizona at some point later on this week. So, you know, lots of things going on.
Yeah, Joe, I'm just looking at their 40-man roster. Since the season started, you know, they've added Avila, Parsons, Zach Kent, and Peter Strzelecki, I think I said that right.
Almost, it's Strzelecki.
Strzelecki.
You put a phantom N in there. That's okay.
Yeah. So what does this mean, Joe? I mean, I can't remember a season where they've added these many pitchers, you know, so early in the year.
I've got to believe it's part of, you know, the new coaching staff and vote. Some of these guys have to have had relationships with or been seen by, you know, guys like Craig Alvarez or Kai Correa or, you know, any of these other guys that they've brought in as far as into the organization. And really, it says that the Guardians are still sort of scouring the waiver wires and the, you know, their pro scouts, you know, getting looks at guys. To make sure that, you know, anybody who they think pretty highly of, who becomes available, that they try to bring in and give them an opportunity if they fit their profile.
Yeah, I guess they've maxed out this bullpen, so I guess they're looking for as many arms as they can get. But, you know, the guy I feel bad for is Curry. What did this guy do wrong? I mean, he throws five scoreless innings and gets sent down. What are their plans for him? Are they going to bring him back up? Or who's going to be the fifth starter?
I mean, he's a great insurance policy if Tristan McKenzie doesn't stay healthy. Carlos Carrasco continues to not be able to get them any sort of length, if that's the case. Because once Curry gets stretched out, I think he's going to, you know, do what he did on Monday against Boston's lineup. So they told him before he went down, they said, you know, hey, this isn't anything that you did wrong. There was nothing you could do here because he had options. That's the only reason he's going down to AAA. If it were any other situation, I don't think he would. As far as Eli Morgan goes, I mean, he had just pitched two innings the night before. And, you know, Vogt said that this was the shoulder issue was something that had been bothering him. So whether or not you want to believe that is your choice. But, you know, we got to take that at face value. This is I can't see shoulder inflammation for myself. So If they say that Eli Morgan, has shoulder inflammation, then he has shoulder inflammation, and it's 2 weeks rest for him before he can come back, and
And I
then
saw
prob and probably a rehab assignment after that.
I saw Avila has made some starts too last year for San Diego. Is he a possible swing guy in there, or does Lively fall into that fifth spot in a rotation now? That's going to be interesting to watch how this unfolds.
I think there might be a move before they need another a fifth guy. I think they might make a move before that. But if Avila comes in and either does take a spot start, or they just need him for length. I mean, they need a guy who can go multiple innings if they can. I think that's more likely his role here in this, and really it might only be in a game where they're trailing or so. So that's the case as we're heading into. I mean, they might need length today with Carrasco going in an afternoon game, and it's kind of chilly out here. So we'll see how today's game goes before they head back to face Oakland over the weekend.
And then, one more thing, some bad news with Angel Martinez, huh?
Hamate bone. That was unexpected. He's now on the 60-day injured list. They move him off the 40-man roster so that Avila can go on. He had surgery Wednesday morning. I believe it was Dr. Gallagher did the surgery. He's expected to miss 5 to 7 weeks. But this was a guy who was tearing it up in spring training. He just, couldn't avoid the injury bug. First, it was his toe, and then when he was doing rehab, he busts up his hamate bone in his left hand.
Yeah, I felt really bad for him. Like you said, he had a great camp. Then he fouls a ball off his foot, and opens the year on the IL. And now he's got hamate. He's got to get the he had just had surgery on the hamate bone. But that's a most hitters. I would think there's a large percentage of hitters that have had that surgery and come back from it. And I think he'll be all right. It's just a shame he got off to such a great start in Arizona in spring training and won't be able to build on it. Now he's down for what, 5 to 7 weeks.
Yeah, and the way things are going with infielders playing the outfield here for Cleveland, with Gabriel Arias getting his first career start in center field, on Wednesday night. I mean, there was an opportunity there. Martinez had been working out in the outfield and playing in center field actually, in spring training. So there's definitely a path for him if things go the right way. But Arias looked, pretty decent out there. Vogt said he was pretty confident putting their best athlete out there in center field that he could handle things. And this is a hell of a center field to get your first start in center field here in Fenway.
Yeah, Joe. I what? You just have to get a couple of hits, and you're a center fielder on this team now?
I
I
guess.
mean, I would. I was stunned when Arias played center field. I mean, I know Vogt. I read your stuff or listened to. He said he'd been working out there every day, but I don't remember him working out in center field. I mean, I guess if you hit, they're going to find a spot for you, Joe.
Well, and the one thing that he said, the arm definitely plays. I think
Yeah.
you can take Arias's arm and put him anywhere in the field, and that looks pretty good. So I was watching him make throws from center field to third base during pregame, and he looked he, there's just something different when he throws the ball. So kind of interesting to see that. But we'll see if he's back in there again today, or if they give him a rest because he's played what, 5 6 days in a row. So we'll find out. But they wrap up the series here in Boston, quick 4-game series, and then they head back home to face Oakland. Carlos Carrasco on the mound today. What do you expect out of Cookie, and what are we looking for out of Cookie in his fourth start of the year?
Yeah, we need some length, or not we, the Guardians need some length out of Carrasco. He's gone, what, seven, about 8 innings the last two times out, 8 walks, 8 strikeouts. He's got to cut down on the walks. He even, cut down on the strikeouts, Joe, because, he throws a lot of pitches in those in the strikeouts. So he's got to get some early contact and get deep into the game.
Yeah, kind of a tough place to do that in here in Boston is get deep in games because Fenway has that sort of feel where games could get away from you in a hurry. So we'll look for Cookie to do that here this afternoon. All right, Hoynesy, that's going to wrap up today's edition of the Cleveland Baseball Talk podcast. We'll talk dig in from Cleveland on Friday.
Okay, Joe.